Hi, friends. I'm Carolyn. I'm an alcoholic. And I do hail from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. It's nice to be here with you. And I've been sober since March 22nd, 2001. I'm a member of the Lucky People group that meets in Langley, and I'm very grateful to get to celebrate AA's 80th birthday. I love the topic of an informed group conscience, and even more than that, I love the people who want to get up in the morning and come talk about an informed group conscience. I don't think we talk about our traditions or our concepts anywhere near enough. I absolutely need our 12 steps of recovery to stay sober and stay alive, but I'm equally in need of the spiritual principles in our traditions to function well in my sober life. I remember when I first heard about our traditions, I'd been coming to AA for a few months, sort of sniffing around threatening to get sober, but I hadn't taken any real meaningful actions to make that a reality yet. Like many of us, I brought me when I came to AA, all of my good and all of my bad. At this point, I was 30 years old, at the end of my rope. I'd hit what I believed to be my bottom about 4 years prior to that, and continued on with that desperation drinking for what felt like an intolerable amount of time. I was a frequent flyer in drunk tanks and emergency wards, and stainless steel toilets had become quite normal to me. Just like it says in our big book, I had reached that jumping off place. I'd known loneliness as few do, and I wished for the end. Somehow, in spite of that total collapse, when I did make it here at Alcoholics Anonymous with you, I was selfish and defiant and argumentative. The only suggestion I took at the beginning was to join a home group, because a grumpy long-timer I'd met had told me I should put my name down somewhere so I belonged some damn place. I don't know why I listened, pardon me, but I'm very glad I did. And I'm grateful for the love and tolerance those members of the group showed me, because I continued to attend that meeting weekly without missing it, whether I showed up drunk or sober. At one of these meetings I was attending, the topic was Tradition 1, or common welfare, of course, should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. And they'd made the mistake of asking me to share. I said something like this: I'm here for me. I don't care about your welfare. I'm not interested in being united with any of you. Just a ray of sunshine, like, good grief. And so from these beginnings, you can imagine it's been a bit of a process for me to truly embrace our traditions and the importance of an informed group conscience. At one meeting where I was being a ray of sunshine, there was another long-timer there, a gentleman some of you I see from home know. He'd had a stroke and could no longer speak. And he sat me down with a 12 Traditions illustrated pamphlet and pointed at the parts he wanted me to know and made me read them out loud to him. It was a powerful message, even though he used no words. I was humbled by the effort he took, and I had the feeling that what he was trying to direct my attention to must be really important. And that's when I began to take an interest in our traditions. It wasn't long after that I finally stopped drinking between meetings and actually got sober, got into a big book study, worked the steps, and sure enough, just like we're promised, I changed. I rotated through all the service positions at my home group, attended our monthly business meetings, lots of informed group conscience there. I had a chance to see the misinformed, the ill-informed, the uninformed, and the well-informed group conscience take place. I'm sure you've seen them all. Had the opportunity to continue to serve, at our local intergroup as a general service representative, as a district committee member, and sort of worked my way down the triangle, having served as a delegate to our general service conference. So I have some experience on the topic. My experience is that the only way our service structure works at any level is through a well-informed group conscience. It's the groups themselves, I believe, are the most essential element of this. Without that aspect of the groups themselves, nothing in our service structure works. There's a reason the groups are at the top of our upside-down triangle. And, you know, I'd love to tell you all about the service structure and why it's important, but that would be a different 20-minute talk. But let me just say that ensuring two-way communications at all levels of AA service, providing tools like kits and workbooks and our shared experience for our service activities, translating AA literature into languages so people who are still dying of alcoholism have the same opportunity we've had. Those are all very critical things, and they can't happen without a group conscience. You know, and that group conscience at the group level may not seem directly connected, but every time the group has a discussion about maybe splitting their seventh tradition and supporting some other levels of service, that to me is a very well-informed group conscience. Every time that happens, we're supporting these service efforts that impact alcoholics worldwide. And if I remember that when I'm sitting in my business meeting, I'm a better member of my home group. Personally, everything I've learned about Alcoholics Anonymous has come from really three places. Our literature, I rely heavily on the shared experience contained in our literature. Certainly those who've come before me and have led me along the way. And then, of course, as I've continued to have some experience, my own experience has become an important part of that. You know, we're talking today primarily about tradition two, you know, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience, that our leaders are but trusted servants and they don't govern. This informed group conscience allows all of us to be a part of the decision, ensures no one gets to be the boss. How disappointing is that for an alcoholic? If you've never read AA Comes of Age, I encourage you to. It's a beautiful book about our history, and there's some fantastic examples in there about the things that led us to understand how important our informed group conscience is and some of the mistakes we've made along the way. You know, there's the idea of members trying to govern each other, boss each other, make up rules to control one another. And, you know, it didn't work then and it doesn't work now. I'm sure you've had your own experience of that. Speaking more specifically to the topic, I really love our pamphlet, The AA Group, Where It All Begins. It's P16 in your literature catalog if you don't happen to have one. It's a treasure trove of experience about how groups function and about group conscience. Our upside down organization, the ultimate responsibility and final authority for all our services resides with the groups. We're reminded of that. And, what's interesting to me is there's a section in there about informed group conscience, titled Informed Group Conscience. And immediately before that is a section titled Principles Before Personalities. Take from that what you will. You know, and it's a significant statement, certainly for this alcoholic. It puts the responsibility on me to listen without bias. You know, with whatever struggle that may include, it means that those who I love may sometimes be wrong, that those members that maybe I don't love quite as much can often be right. And it puts on me the responsibility to participate without my own fears of being wrong or embarrassed or saying something stupid. If it's going to be an informed group conscience, I need to, you know, get that stuff out of the way. And be there and voice my concerns as they come up. The participation part of anything we do in Alcoholics Anonymous is just so important. You know, all of those group conscience discussions end when someone has the best idea. You know, you've seen it in your home groups, right? You talk about something for a couple minutes, and then that one person has the best idea, and we all go, wow, that's a great idea, and we agree. I think the part we sometimes forget is that that best idea is the result of the discussion that led up to it. It's a result of having participated in that whole debate, having heard what everybody else had to say, and eventually it percolates and comes out of someone's mouth. And that's where our higher power is present in the group conscience. It's like that idea of, you know, you stop looking for your keys when you've lost them, they're always in the last place you look. And it's because that's where you stop looking. And it's the same thing with the group conscience. Of course, the last place you hear it is where you stop looking. And it doesn't mean that one person's had a better idea than another. It means they've had the opportunity to hear from everybody as we reason it out as a group. It also, in the pamphlet on the group, where it talks about an informed group conscience. It talks about the principle of rotation. And we're reminded that rotation brings us spiritual rewards far more enduring than any fame. That with AA, no status at stake, we needn't compete for titles or praise. We have complete freedom to serve as we are needed. And I'm just going to go on a bit of a limb here and say that it's my experience that there are a few things that can stand in the way of an informed group conscience more than members who refuse to rotate. Whether that's actually from a position or whether that's that rotating in title only, but I'm still going to hold on to everything about the position. You know, I'm sure you've got people you're thinking of as I talk about that. So it's just so important that we make room for that new voice. You know, for any of you who've had a chance to participate maybe in an area assembly in your own community, I often find the person at their first assembly, the brand new GSR, is the person who comes to the mic with the most important thing I've heard through that whole discussion. And that new voice and those fresh ideas and that different way of looking at things is so important for our future. Holding on to what we've always done is fantastic. I mean, we've learned a lot of things along the way in Alcoholics Anonymous, but we've changed along the way because the world around us has. And if we don't embrace that voice, that new voice with that new idea as part of that informed group conscience, I think we're going to hold Alcoholics Anonymous back for the next 80 years. I want me just checking the time here. I'm not waiting for a call. So the pamphlet explains what an informed group conscience is, and I'm just going to briefly read this. The group conscience is the collective conscience of the group membership and thus represents substantial unanimity on an issue before definitive action is taken. This is achieved by the group members through the sharing of full information, individual points of view, and the practice of AA principles. To be fully informed requires a willingness to listen to minority opinions with an open mind. On sensitive issues, the group works slowly, discouraging formal motions until a clear sense of its collective view emerges. Placing principles before personality, the membership is wary of dominant opinions. The voice is heard when a well-informed group arrives at a decision. The result rests on more than a yes or no count, precisely because it is the spiritual expression of the group conscience. The term informed group conscience implies that pertinent information has been studied and all views have been heard before the group votes. Well, what an order I can't go through with it. I don't know about you, but that's not what it looks like necessarily. In every meeting I've participated in, I'm just going to share my own experience here about some things that I've seen that really help in trying to arrive at an informed group conscience. It's repeating some of what was in the pamphlet, but taking our time with important matters. I mean, I know we all want to go to the coffee shop after the meeting, but some decisions really merit a little more time and consideration than that. And rarely is there anything that's so urgent it has to be decided in one meeting. I've seen very few emergencies in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think we could make better use of that sort of calming principle of why don't we wait till the next meeting and ask a couple people to research this and bring some information back. I love that alcoholic opinion where we're experts on, you know, how the internet works and we're experts on what the government policy is for this and we're going to spout off all these great ideas without actually researching anything. It's this fantastic alcoholic trait, but it doesn't really lend itself to a well-informed group conscience. If it's a small group, something I've seen work really well is going around the group and giving everyone an opportunity to speak rather than waiting for people to put their hands up. There are people who have fantastic things to say that just wouldn't put their hands up. They're not hand-uppers. There's just different types of people in our rooms, right? And to try to facilitate a meeting in such a way to draw out those voices is so important because there are people like me who will completely dominate a meeting left to run wild because I've got an idea a minute and I'm not shy to tell you what it is. So when the meeting's chaired in such a way that you're hearing from everybody equally, I think you get the benefit of all those voices, which leads to a better informed group conscience in my experience. And I'm not sure what your experience is with this. I imagine if you got up to be at a 9:30 meeting on the informed group conscience, you probably have some interest in the subject, maybe some involvement to service at your group or maybe even beyond. But we do have this love for word crafting. Like, we'll get completely bogged down in word crafting emotion, and of course there's always somebody who can improve upon it. So let's not discuss it too much before we start amending it. And somehow we can get dragged out into the weeds of the process and completely lose sight of the problem we're trying to solve, the idea we're trying to form, the principle we're trying to talk about, you know, and there's an opportunity, I think, to just set that aside and say, let's just talk about this for 10 minutes and see what comes out of that before we get so bogged down in the exact precise wording of what we're trying to do, because we haven't talked enough about what the goal is to know how to word it. But there's always that person, you know, the two people have spoken to the motion, so let's start amending it. It is my experience. That really doesn't help that informed group conscience. We need time to just work through it and talk it out. You know, for those of you who are familiar with the 12 concepts for world service, there's a couple great suggestions in concept 9. One of them is that we try implementing ideas on a trial basis wherever possible. I don't think we do that enough. I think there's a fantastic opportunity, especially if we're just not sure or we're trying to make it up as we go along. There's a fantastic opportunity to say, you know what, why don't we just try this for 3 months and we'll talk about it and see how it went. It's not a radical idea. It's not my idea. It's in concept 9 of our 12 concepts for world service. But I like to bring it up because I think that sometimes when we're stuck in a group conscience, we forget that that's an option that's suggested in our literature. It also tells us in concept 9 that sometimes progress is achieved through increasing series of compromises. Isn't that just beautiful? An increasing series of compromises. So here's an idea for this alcoholic. That means I don't get my way. That means that if I've decided that I know what the best idea is, and that the group has another idea, well, imagine that. I'm not going to have it go the way I can clearly see is best. And you would all know that too, if only you, you know, followed my, you've all read step 3. There's an opportunity, I think, for that increasing series of compromises. You know, and I'll give you an example. In my home area, which is Area 79, British Columbia, Yukon, we had talked at our assemblies about putting our area newsletter on our website. We had talked about it for years. I mean, this was a motion at every assembly. There were lineups at the mic. You know, the internet was newer at the time, and there was a lot of fear around this possibility. And the compromise that finally got us unstuck was that we would put it up with a password. Because there was this great fear. And I mean, we can't get our members to read our newsletters. The idea of the general public hacking into, I don't know if that's a real fear. But the compromise, was that we put it up with a password. And then the further compromise was that the password would not be, so complex that, it would be inaccessible to our members. So our newsletter is called Grassroots. The password is AA Grassroots. And we seem to have found that compromise. Had we stayed entrenched in our positions that it needs to be broadly available or never put on the internet, we could not have crossed that bridge. So I think it's an important thing we remember that in terms of the group conscience. And this is, I really am going way out on a limb here. I have a couple things in my notes and I'm over here right now, but it a personal thing that concerns me at times. You know, I support that it's important we keep minutes of our meetings. I think it's really important that we know what decisions we've made and how we got there, that we look at that. I think looking at that is part of how we make informed decisions. There's not a lot of new problems in Alcoholics Anonymous. Quite often we can look at what we've done past practice practice and come up with a really good answer. But when we start using that as, oh no, we had a motion in 1992 that said this, that's not an informed group conscience. You know, our past practice is part of how we become informed. It's not how we shut down discussion. I have a crazy example of that, but I've only got about 2 minutes left, so I'll give you the short version. And that's that when I was elected area chair, we keep a book of motions for that purpose of making informed decisions. And I went through it. I wanted to make sure we were following all of the rules. And I didn't see quite how insane my thinking was. Like, I was looking at these like they were laws, not past experience. And when I got to the motion that failed, there was a motion that we have a non-smoking section in our assembly many, many, many years ago, obviously, and the motion failed. I realized that, okay, maybe looking at this as what we're supposed to be doing today is insane, because that would mean that our whole assembly is smoking in facilities that no longer allow that in 2015. You know, and it's just an example to me of how we can't let our past practice bind us. We can't shut down today's discussion because we made a decision about that a year ago. That's not an informed discussion. That's using our past practice as a way to close down that discussion rather than open it up. I mean, we look to it for part of how we become informed, but we don't limit ourselves to it. So those are just a few thoughts of my own based on my experience. Yours might be very different from mine. I love that about AA. It takes all of us, every single one of us. There is not a member here whose view could ever represent the totality of AA experience on any subject. And I think that's one more reason why it's so important that we continue to share with one another. Part of sharing, of course, is listening. So it's my turn to do that part. And I just want to thank you so much for the opportunity to be here with you and to share with you today.
Thank you, Carolyn. Very well informed for that. Another way of an informed group conscience is to invite all your sponsees to vote the way you want to vote. That usually works. That works well, you know. And now we're going to have Larry. And the informed group conscience, he has his phone, and he has 1959 on there. He's going to go by 20 minutes. He's going to speak. So he was informed, and he's going to follow direction.
Very good. Thank you, Larry.
We can start that.
Hi, good morning. My name's Larry Fighton. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since May 27th, 1979. And I owe that to a God of my understanding, great sponsorship. I've had great sponsorship all of my sobriety, and also to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole and to service. I would tell you briefly, I came in at in May of 1979, May 27th, and I got out of treatment. I was a treatment product, and I found my way to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got a sponsor, right, pretty quick. And so this will relate to my total service experience. So I had kind of a rough childhood growing up, and I told my sponsor my whole story growing up, and it was a long, you know, arduous, poor me. And I was 40 years old. And he said, well, Larry, you know, he said, you may not have had a very happy childhood, but you're really having a long one. I said, oh, boy. So that will give you a little idea how long it took me to get into a service structure. By the way, Carolyn talked about that pamphlet, in case any of you didn't hear. This is what it looks like. All right? If anybody wants to give, I'll leave it up here on the desk when we're done. So anyway, I stayed connected to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I always went to a lot of meetings. But I really didn't get into a service structure for a long, long time. I tried to be a GSR a few times. I didn't know anything about it. Nobody was really helped me a lot that I can recall, or I wasn't listening. Probably more of that. But anyway, my sponsor, I had 24 years, and he passed away. And I kicked around for about a year. And You know, I don't know that I sponsored myself. All I know is I didn't have a lot of growth in that year. It was kind of flat. And so one day, my home group is Fox Hall, Chapter 7. We meet on Thursday night in Eden Prairie. We shake hands at 7, and meeting starts at 7:30. And so I had met my sponsor many, many times, Terry L. Actually, he was on panel with these two young ladies. And so I wandered into Fox Hall on my 25th anniversary, and I wandered in there, and Terry said, come over here, I've been saving a chair for you. And he gave me a cake, and he became my sponsor. And the first thing that happened was he said, by the way, you've been sober a long time, you've got a lot of experience, you need to be in service, and we'll start it next Monday, District 7, and they need help over there. So I became corrections chair. And from that, I became area corrections chair, and I did that, rotated after a few years. And I spent a year out, and now I rotated in. I was alternate cooperation with the professional community chair. Now I am the area 36 cooperation with the professional community. And so I've been spending a lot of time in service, and I love it. I can't believe how much my life has changed just by doing these things. And so I was in Arizona for about a month, and on the second to the last day I was there, my phone rang, and it was a 212 number, and I was playing golf. I was surprised I answered the phone. But anyway, I says, 212, that must be New York. So I answered the phone, and they said, you haven't answered our email. And I go, I don't know what it's about. Well, would you like to speak at the conference? And I go, yeah. And it says, call Eva Sanchez tomorrow. And I did. And she said, I said, yes, right away. And then she said, your topic will be the informed group conscience. And I almost fell off the chair. I go, I know what it is. How do you speak about it? So it was been a good experience because I've had to look inside of myself about, I talked to some people and they say, share your own experience. And just a couple of quick things. I'll probably read what she read at the end, just because we know that everybody doesn't listen intently. And, how do we arrive at a group conscience? Well, first of all, one of the things that I recently read was, tradition two is, for a group purpose, there is one ultimate authority, a God of our understanding. He may express himself in our group conscience. When I read that, I always read that a lot of times, but then I read this little quip, and it said, it's not how we work through God, it's how God works through us. And I always wanted to figure out how I can work that way and not listen so much to what's coming this way. And so, and that's what tradition two says. So anyway, I don't know when I got started here, but the group conscious can be found. First of all, you can have group conscience in groups, districts, areas. Actually, GSO it can be arrived at in many, many different ways through group conscious meetings or business meetings. Somebody asked me that I should ask this, and so I'll take a chance. Show of hands, how many attended their last home group, business, or group conscious meeting? Yes. All right. That's great. Okay. Me too. Anyway, we can, it can be done a number of ways. Absolutely, through business meeting, group conscience meetings, we arrive at a group conscience. Another way that I found that there's a lot of group conscience comes about is through group inventory. And group inventory, again, can be taken at the group level, district. I've been involved in district group inventories, and I've been involved in our area inventory. And I would guess GSO also does their inventory. So, and there can be a lot. There, you probably know all the questions. What is the purpose of the group? And, what more can we do to carry the message? And this can create a lot of discussion, particularly in a group. In the area, are we bringing in people who are up to the job. And I actually did it in our, we have a Rust conference called Recovery Unity and Service Conference, and I had to speak on servants, not senators. So I had I did a lot of work. And so, are we bringing people in that are servants and not people who want to be run things? And I've seen both sides of this in our area, in our district, and our groups, of course. So that's another way that, you know, we can arrive at a group consensus is through group inventory. And there's also, you know, when we do business meetings or group conscience meetings, there's I think that pamphlet talks about setting up guidelines for this. You know, there should be established guidelines before this whole process begins. And again, that pamphlet gives a lot of information about how we do that. I have a few experiences, and you know, people told me just share your own experience. And so, I thought about a couple of things, and this one, I don't know if this was ever arrived through a group conscience, but I was in a meeting when I first changed sponsors. I was going to a meeting on a Monday night, and there were a couple old timers in that meeting that were very, very strong figures. And there was two groups of thought on it. One of them said, you never get in front of a group unless you have a coat and tie. And the other one said, but there's new people come in and they're come off the streets and they don't have money. And, you know, so this was going on. I heard this stuff in the group. It was not my home group. And so I really didn't participate in their business meetings. So I don't know if there was a group conscience that it came about this. But lo and behold, I was asked to speak on Step in Tradition 2. And so I studied Tradition 2, and I thought about it and thought about it and thought about it. And then I've been to that meeting for about 6 or 8 months. And I how I arrived, and this is what I talked about. I said, you know what? I don't know if you've arrived at a group conscience, and I know there's some controversy in this group about how you approach the group, but everybody I've seen come in front of this group is always men. I've always been in coat and tie, so that's what I'm doing. And to me, that's group conscience. That's the way I arrived at it. So I don't know if it was an established group conscience, but that's what they did, and so that's what I did. Another one was, you know, back in 2001 after 9/11, and this one really became really important for me because it was a little bit before I really got into a strong service structure. And the meeting I was going to, somebody stood up and they said, we should need to pray for everybody that was killed at the towers. And somebody else got up and they said, no, we can't. It's an outside issue. And this thing, it was in the right during the group meeting. And finally, somebody said, we should table this for a business meeting. So, and it turned out the business meeting was like the next Wednesday before the meeting. And I've been to that business meeting a lot of times, and there was usually 4 or 5 people. We had like 30 people at that meeting. And this thing got kicked back and forth and back and forth, and it went around and around and around. Should we, shouldn't we? Well, maybe only the alcoholics that were killed. And, you know, we had all this. So finally a lady stood up and said, you know, our first tradition says, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on group unity. And she said that. She said, this issue right now is disunifying us. We have a problem here. And if we continue, this group is going to split. And everybody listened and finally understood that this was not a topic we should even be talking about. You know, at least for that group, they decided, and the group just decided that this was not going to go any further, and it was just done. And so people were informed about our first tradition that maybe some people never even heard the first tradition that were there. But it was important that somebody stood up and mentioned that to me, and at least for me it was to hear that. And so that was, you know, another experience. And where are we with time here? I give it 8:21. Okay, thank you. Okay, sorry about that. The last thing I'd like to talk about was this happened this March in our area assembly, and this one really, really was, to me, was very important because I've not seen anything like this in all my experiences in service. So we were at the area assembly, and this came out of a group in our area, and it came to one of the districts, and it passed the district, so, you know, it arrives on the floor of the area assembly. And the thing was that they wanted to have General Service Office create a hardbound cover of Daily Reflections. And, boy, I'm telling you, we have discussion about this. And, you know, like what Carolyn said, right away there's amendments before the thing even gets anywhere. Well, what about, do you want the little book or the big book or both books? I mean, this goes round and round and round and round and round. And there was a lot of discussion. I think a discussion went on for 40 minutes. And finally, it came to a vote. So they took a vote, and I remember this distinctly. There were 66 voting members, and the vote was taken, and it was passed 53-13 in favor of creating a hardbound copy, and then we would pass this on to the General Service Conference. So they asked for minority opinion. And so, yeah, there was a lot of minority opinions. All 13 people spoke. I was one of them. And mine was like, you know, the same argument that we'd say, you know, General Service, you know, they don't have the kind of money to do this. And but one of my brother Pigeons was sitting next to me, and he's a remote community chair, and he's in a wheelchair, and he spoke to it. And he said, some time ago, I asked my group to change our meeting time from 7:30 to 7 o'clock. And this came to our group conscience, and it got kicked around. It was argued about back and forth, and eventually it was not passed. And so it stayed at 7:30. And the idea was that this is not going to get any more alcoholics to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a convenience for me. And I would like to say that this, doing a hardbound copy of this book, is not going to get any more people to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's convenience for people who want this. And so they asked for a revote. The revote was taken. I've never seen a turnaround like this. It was 54-12 to not do the book. See, what an important thing is, what do we do? What is our most important thing that we, you know, one of the most important things we do is, how do we get them to Alcoholics Anonymous, and how do we get them to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous? I think we heard a lot of that last night. You know, how do we get people to stay once they're here? So most of most of the group conscience is about, you know, all of that. How do we get people, and how do we stay? So I try and keep that in the forefront. And I got a few minutes. If I didn't mind, I would like to share a personal story. My wife was an Alcoholics Anonymous a little longer than me, and she passed away some 3.5 years ago. And so I'm kind of retired. I do a little bit of work in the morning, but I'm sort of retired. And I shop a lot in the afternoon. And I remember I was at Costco, and I got the cart, and I'm just charging through Costco. And it was like 2 o'clock, and I'm going, what's wrong with me? Why, I don't have anywhere to go and nothing to do. And so, you know, so I started thinking about that a lot. I drive too fast. You know, all these things are coming up, you know. And, you know, and after I got through it, then I took some time, and I started thinking about it a lot. I thought, you know, we're making way too much of this, you know. Like, you know how we do. Like, I'm making a big deal out of this, and it's not really a problem. So I was going through some files, and I was still cleaning stuff out of the house, and I found this file folder, and I pulled it out from behind a thing, and I pulled the first manila folder out of there, and it was my wife's inventory that had passed away. I go, I ain't going to look at this. Put it in there, and I took it down to the shredder. So I got it down there, and I go, well, maybe I'll just take it. It's an absolutely true story. I pulled that manila folder out, and I pulled it out, and it says, fourth step, resentment, first resentment, Larry. Always in a hurry. Thank you for letting me share, and thank you to Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thank you, Larry. After being involved in a group probably 2 or 3 years and going to the business meeting and stuff, we were going to take a really get this group going to the best that we could. So we got all our minds together. And there was probably 10 of us sitting at a business meeting, and we're really going to be the best group in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and we're really doing, you know, and there was a guy that we didn't know sitting off to the side. And we had everything figured out, everything voted on. And he turned around and he says, "What about the beginner?" You know, we had to redo the whole meeting, you know. So there are things that we had to do at our meetings. We try to complicate things a lot of times, and we do that. And our next speaker is Cheryl from New Hampshire. Cheryl.
My timer. I'm long-winded sometimes. Good morning, everyone. My name is Cheryl. I am an alcoholic. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here with you this morning. My sobriety date is July 19th, 1996. My home group is the Living Sober Group. We meet in Andover, New Hampshire, the village of Potter Place, on Sunday mornings from 10 to 11:30. You're all welcome to attend. I'd love to have you as my home group members. All of you going to business meetings. That's awesome. I might ask you to split up into little smaller groups, though. I don't know. We could fit you all in here. I have a sponsor, and I have a service sponsor. I'd like to thank my AA family for being here this morning to support me. I tried to discourage them from coming, but they were not to be sold. So I really appreciate that. And I'd like to thank my higher power, who I hope will give me the proper words to share with you this morning. I actually had writing that I had done, and it's neatly stored in my computer that I could not print out this morning. And I had done some reading. And my pocketbook is really not big enough to carry all those books, so the books are back at the hotel. So I'm sharing from what I have in my heart with you this morning, and I hope that it helps. I have been doing a little reflecting on my introduction to the traditions and on my experience with group conscience, the informed group conscience, and sometimes the uninformed group conscience. And my first home group was a 7-day-a-week meeting. They met on every day at 6:30 a.m. And it was through the grace of God that I found that meeting. I was not a morning person, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, but I was certainly desperate enough to go to that meeting. And I found a lot of good, solid experience, both in AA recovery and also in AA service at that meeting. That's where I found my sponsor, my first sponsor, and that's where I found my first service commitment. That group meets Manchester, New Hampshire, First Light of Day group, and that group was very strong in their traditions. As a matter of fact, they studied the traditions every Monday. And if there was a Monday that I was feeling a little tired, it was easy for me to say, "Oh, it's just a tradition. I'm not going today." And I was chastised for that. You know, they would tell me they missed me. But I was the curious type, and sometimes people call me the nosy type, because I was the one who was raising my hands and asking questions. And they always announced the business meeting, and they would say it meets, you know, when the business meeting was to be held, and all are welcome to attend. And then they would also announce the district meeting when that was, and that you didn't have to be a GSR to go to the district meeting. So I was exposed to the service structure very early on. My first position with the group was as the group coffee maker. I don't think they quite knew what to do with me, so they gave me that position. Coffee maker and setup person, Sunday morning. Setup was circular. It was a round robin discussion meeting, and I had the chairs lined up perfectly so you could get in between the chairs without moving them. My sponsor would probably come in and mess all the chairs up so that I wouldn't have to, so that I would not let go of some of that perfectionism I had. So I had that position as coffee maker for a year, and I got pretty good at it. I had the coffee ready at 6 o'clock so that the old timers would come in and have their coffee and be all set for 6:30 when the meeting started. Didn't really want to let go of the job, but it was time to rotate on, and they gave me the job of bookie. Now, I had no idea what some of these words meant, so I'm going to explain what bookie is for those of you who don't know. We would swap exchange commitments. We would go to another group and speak, and then they would come in and speak to us. And so that's what booking was all about. Well, I was the I was in the advanced placement class of AA. I wanted to be to get A's in everything, including my bookie commitment. And so I was booking commitments all over New England. And that was back in the day where you had to pay for long-distance telephone calls. And I remember going to a business meeting with a phone bill and saying, look at what this is costing me. You folks have to help me with this. I can't afford this. And this is where the tradition of principles before personalities kicked in, because they loved me. You know, they were my home group. They loved me, but they were not going to pay my phone bill. No. And through a loving group conscience, I learned that, you know, I had to practice responsibility. I had to practice the seven tradition and be self-supporting through my own contributions. And that if it was too expensive for me to make those phone calls, to not book commitments all over New England, you know? So my experience through the years with informed group conscience has been pretty varied. And as I was sitting here listening to these two wonderful speakers this morning, you know, I remember thinking about, you know, some of those experiences. After going through the positions at my home group, I became what they call an LCM, local committee member to the district. And I would go around to all the groups and I would offer my services to them as the, group inventory, professional. And, I got told a few times exactly what my place was there. First of all, I had to get invited to go. I couldn't just show up at their business meetings and expect them to listen to me. And second of all, that they were really the ones who were going to make the decisions about their group. It wasn't going to be me. I remember going and talking about the seven tradition and kind of banging the seven tradition gavel, you know, at them a lot and telling them they needed to contribute to district. I hope I didn't cause too many problems with that, but I might have. I mean, my apologies if that's the case. I became the DCM for that district, and it is the largest district in New Hampshire. And they kind of like to do things in their way, and they don't like to they don't like to do things necessarily the way the other districts do. So there was a time that I had to go to the area and go and speak in front of the area assembly and tell the area assembly that my district was not in favor of this particular item that was on the agenda. And it was tough. It was really, really tough, because here you are, informed group conscience, right? My group was saying, my district was saying no to this proposal, and all the other districts were saying yes to it. So I was in the minority, and that was hard for me to swallow. I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be a part of. But this is how we live, and this is how we grow as recovering alcoholics today. I like to think about all of the different types of groups that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of my great joys was serving as chair of the Area Functions Committee, and we put on the state convention. And when I was in that position as area chair, it was really nice, because you're in a group of people that understands that you work together in order to achieve the common goal. And I remember being very nervous about that position, as I was about all my positions in AA. But when I got to that level and when I started working with a group of people, I came to realize how important it was to listen to every point of view, and then to reach that informed group conscience together, not for any one person to be telling anyone else what to do. And, you know, as chair, it was important for me to make sure that things ran smoothly and to make sure that we accomplished what we were set to, what we were trying to accomplish. But that there was certainly time, you know, to be discussing these things along the way. And so it was a wonderful experience for me and prepared me well for what I was later to experience as delegate. I'm going to share a little bit about my experience as delegate because that is like the greatest, that is the greatest group conscience that I have experienced in my years in service. And I think what was really amazing to me about that experience was the fact that, in, you know, 93 delegates from all over the United States and Canada gathered, and the trustees and the GSO staff, you know, we're all together and we were talking about matters that affect AA as a whole. And, you know, we were talking about things like, you know, what types of literature were going to be published and, whether we were going to have a new, PSA or whether we were going to do a video for corrections, you know, to revise things and, a lot of matters that, that really impact the newcomer. And that's really, you know, the bottom line, what we're here for. And it amazed me to really, you know, consider that there were many times during my, my 2 years as delegate that we would vote, on a particular matter and then, the minority opinion would speak up. And I cannot emphasize to you, and I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir here, the importance of minority opinion. And I don't think it matters the size of the group, whether it's in your home group or whether it's, you know, at the conference. The minority opinion is crucial. And it is one of our, it is one of our safeguards against sometimes overpowering, you know, majority voice that may not be as well informed as we need it to be. And so it was really powerful for me because we would sit for hours, you know, discussing these items and, you know, the AA ship does not move quickly and how important, how well do we know that, right? But sometimes it does move and it moves, I think, exactly at the speed that it's supposed to, that it's supposed to move. So it was, you know, amazing to me that we would discuss these items for hours sometimes and we were up late. And we were, you know, and sometimes we'd have to, you know, abandon our sharing session in order to handle these items on the agenda. And some, and we would have these discussions and then the minority opinion would speak and the minds were changed. And we're celebrating this year, the 80th birthday of AA. Happy birthday, AA. Yay! Yay! And happy Independence Day. We are independent from alcohol today. What a gift. And we're celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Big Book this year. You know, and I was a part of that process that came, that brought the 75th anniversary Big Book, you know, to being. And if you don't have a copy, please get one because a lot of work went into creating that. And, you know, there's my little soapbox thing today, sorry. But it's, you know, when we think about having to vote on that, that was a conference action that mm-hmm. 75th anniversary Big Book should be published. And there was discussion about a French version and a Spanish version of it. And it was hard because the Canadians are our friends, you know, and the Spanish speaking population, they're our friends. We're all one. But it wasn't the Spanish Big Book that was celebrating the anniversary. It wasn't the French Big Book. It was the English, you know, and we didn't want this to be just a trinket. We didn't want this to be, just a commodity item. We wanted it to have significance and meaning. And so after this discussion around, you know, what we were going to do, we finally got to the place where we were able to say yes, you know, to the 75th anniversary Big Book. And so there it is. It's out there for you. And please do consider purchasing one if you don't have one yet. Checking my time here. Oops. Let's try that again. Okay, I still have a little bit of time. That's good. One of the things that I really love about the traditions, about unity, is that the literature really gives us a lot of opportunities to study and to reflect on what these traditions are about. And when I was preparing for today, I read I read from the 12 and 12. It is still one of my favorite books, and it's what I broke my teeth on, in early recovery and early service work. And so I just want to bring back to mind for you, that thing about principles before personalities and how it reflects on the informed group conscience. In the essay on Tradition 2, Bill is the subject of Tradition 2. And if you remember that story, he had an opportunity to get a paid job doing the work that he was doing for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, this man had given so much of his time, so much of his energy to Alcoholics Anonymous, to helping drunks. And they weren't doing very well financially, finally, he was approached and he was asked, would you like to have an office? Would you like to be a lay therapist? And he thought about, saving Lois all of that time and effort that she was putting in, just working, working jobs to put food on their table and take care of the drunks that they were taking care of. And he thought he had great schemes. He had great plans for how he would use that money for good purpose. I mean, everything was all seemed above board. And he thought, he was getting guidance from his higher power and so on. And he was all excited about it, and he went home and he talked to Lois, and Lois even knew that there was something not quite right about this. And he brought the topic to his group. He brought this idea to his group, and they felt bad, and they were like, Bill, we feel badly. You give of yourself so much and you're not doing really well financially. We wish you could do something about that. But don't you see how we can't professionalize AA? We can't make this that you get paid for it. It has to be a vocation. It has to be from the heart. And Bill realized that the group was right. And so how important is it, for each of us to put aside our personal desires in order to look at what's best for the group? There's a lot of matters that affect AA today. There's a lot of discussion about so many issues, regarding our primary purpose, regarding, how we are welcoming newcomers and how we're handling, those who are coming to us. There have been debates over the years about, signing court papers. There's been debates about smoking and non-smoking. I'm glad that's not an issue anymore. And groups can become divided. One of my favorite things to say is, when the discussion is getting a little heated, how about taking a moment of silence? How about saying that serenity prayer? At my home group now, we say the serenity prayer and we say the responsibility statement to remind us, of what our purpose is and why we're there. And, we wish we had more people showing up for our group conscience meeting. I just go and I talk to people. I think the personal approach is still the one that works the best. And I just say, come be a part of this. The newcomer is the one who frequently has the best idea. They are looking at us with new set of eyes. They may see things that we don't see. They certainly know what it's like to be new and what they need in order to stay sober. This is a life and death illness, and we have a solution, and the solution is in recovery. Once again, I'd like to thank you all for your attention today. You've been most kind, and I wish you Godspeed in your journey, recovery. Stay active in service. Aim high. There's a big need for service workers out there, and I was told when I was about 5 years sober, and I was in the DCM, I was told, one day you'll be delegate. And I never believed it. I never thought it would be possible. I certainly never dreamed I'd be standing at the International Convention speaking to you all. And here I am. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Cheryl.